This week's pundit is our largely laissez-faire thinker, Eric Crampton, head of research at the New Zealand Initiative. Kia ora, Eric.
Good evening.
Welcome back to Nights. Immigration.
Yeah.
Could be a deal breaker in election 2017 in terms of maybe who forms a government with who. Is that why the New Zealand Initiative decided to publish a report on it just the other day?
A happy coincidence. The report came out earlier this year, but we'd planned on this one 2 years ago when we set our research agenda for the coming couple of years. So I guess we had a bit of foresight.
Is New Zealand enjoying a significant net migration gain at the moment because New Zealand's so fantastic? Sorry about the clumsy use of the English language there. Or because the rest of the world's so crap?
I think it's both at the same time. That I like to think of it as that New Zealand is getting worse far more slowly than anywhere else in the world, if you're going to look at that in kind of a decline sense, right? America's going totally crazy. The UK is going a bit nuts too. Europe's in madness. New Zealand is an island of sanity in a world going mad, and that makes it pretty attractive.
If we have a look at the picture in terms of net migration gain, how important are the number of New Zealanders who are coming home at the moment because they either don't have an opportunity or don't see much opportunity in staying overseas or maybe something better here, and those choosing not to leave? If we took those out of the equation, would we be having these net migration gains right now?
Well, we're having the net migration gains primarily because in prior years, we had a big outflow of Kiwis. So New Zealanders used to disproportionately leave. Now it's almost balanced where you've got about 1,000 or 2,000 more Kiwis leaving per year than are coming back home. But it used to be that the big outflow of Kiwis was counterbalancing a big inflow of people from abroad. Now we're not having that counterbalance of outflowing Kiwis. We've got Kiwis coming back, and we've got a lot of foreigners who want to come in and make New Zealand their home.
Is migration overheating our economy?
Well, it depends how you look at it. It's kind of fun. We talk sometimes about Schrodinger's immigrant who is simultaneously on benefits and taking your job. If we're thinking about migrants overheating the economy, they can't simultaneously be stealing everybody's jobs. And the latest household labor force survey data very strongly says they're not stealing anybody's jobs. If anything, employment is stronger than it's been in the entire data series that we've got. So Stats New Zealand data on this goes back to 1987, and there has been no year in March quarter data that's had a greater proportion of the population working or participating in the labor force. We've had huge increases in the number of people here, but that has been more than outpaced by job growth. So all of the arguments about immigrants stealing jobs, it's just misfounded. And a quick look at the employment stats makes it really obvious. Migrants come in, they demand goods and services at the same time as they're supplying labor. The net effect of that in most of the international work ends up being a wash or a slight positive for native-born. But we're hit 80% labor force participation in the last numbers, which is incredibly high in international standards and incredibly high in the data going back to 87.
Why is it then that it's such a surefire attention catcher? I'm not going to say vote winner yet because we don't know. We have to wait till the election to find out for sure. And I don't even know what I'm not quite up with the recent polls, but I think New Zealand First is doing reasonably well at the moment. It has been gaining support, if my memory of recent polls is correct. Why does it seem to serve some politicians so well?
Well, there are very real pressures in the Auckland housing market, and I think that's fueling a lot of it. I think that's been fueling a lot of our concerns around inequality. I think it's also fueling concerns about immigration. It's easy to see people who are bidding against you at a house auction and blame migration figures when you should be looking instead at the rules that prevent new housing from coming in. So if you go around Auckland, it's not like there's a shortage of barber shops or of used cars or of avocados, except for a little while a few months back. Migrants demand.
There was quite a shortage, actually.
There was, a few months back.
I'm not going to blame migrants for that.
We shouldn't. But
no.
Every other good and service, we're not running out of. The only thing that we're running out of is houses, and that's the thing that the government won't let you build more of because they've messed up how they finance the infrastructure. So there are real pressures in the housing market, and I suppose it's trivially true that if you banned people from coming in, you wouldn't have as much of a run-up in house prices. But you could do a lot better by simply allowing people to build more.
Did your investigation attempt to look at how well migrants are mixing with the locals? Was that an interest of yours?
Oh, yeah. So our report is called The New New Zealanders. It's on the initiative's website. And we started there by trying to get a handle on the things that were worrying people about immigration and taking it to the data to see what we could find on it. And one of the more sensible concerns that you could have is just looking at what's going on in Europe and the messes that they've gotten into, where you've got enclaves of second and third generation immigrants who haven't gotten proper labor market integration. They are not working. They've got low education. They're not integrating into the rest of the culture. And consequently, it's sort of hotbeds for just terrible social environments and bad outcomes, right? You couldn't help but growing up very frustrated in that kind of a world, and that gives rise to crime and then some of the terrorist outbreaks that they've had. It gives fertile ground for radicalism. When we looked at the New Zealand data, we found instead really strong labor market attachment, really strong integration into local society. We're not seeing the kinds of ethnic clustered enclaves that you see in Europe. There's been a bit more growth in predominantly Asian neighborhoods in Auckland, but nothing like the kind of thing that they've been seeing in Europe. And a really big part of that is how flexible our labor market institutions are. So in Europe, they've got very protected job markets where you've got all kinds of rules about who's allowed to do what. And New Zealand makes it a lot easier for people to come in and have a go and get a job. The connections that you get by being in a workplace just start automatically integrating you into New Zealand culture and society. And that then means that we're not having the kinds of problems that they're having elsewhere. Far more New Zealand migrants report feeling like a New Zealander, feeling welcome, than you'll see in responses among migrants in other places like Germany.
Migration is one way of this country dealing with shortages in some skills. But are we over-relying on migration and not addressing the need for a better set-up education system, tertiary and secondary, which gives people in New Zealand who grow up in New Zealand the skills that will meet some of the requirements that the market at the moment has to look overseas for?
Well, I think there's always opportunity to improve the education system. We do have some schools that persistently fail their students, and some of those have been doing that for a decade, and the government hasn't quite smartened them up yet. But I think it would be a mistake to say that foreigners are displacing New Zealanders in that kind of a setup. The employment rates, so the percentage of people aged 15 to 64 in New Zealand who were in work in the last quarter's annual data, it was 76%. It has never been higher than that. The kind of argument you're advancing could make sense if there was a substantial amount of Kiwis who were unemployed and had and we didn't have opportunities for retraining. Instead, we're having big increases in labor force participation. People who haven't participated in work at all are coming into the labor market and looking for work because there are a lot of opportunities there now. Most of them are finding employment. We're seeing drops in the number of unemployed people, despite huge increases in population.
But aren't we, for example, of Auckland with the City Rail Link, talk of people being housed on ships, people coming in from overseas. We don't have the people in New Zealand to build the tunnels.
Oh, yeah. One of my other frustrations is that Canterbury had this great migration program after the earthquakes where they allowed a lot of people to come in to work in construction to help rebuild after the earthquakes. You'd think it'd be an obvious move to say, okay, you can all now move to Auckland to go and help build motorways there and build infrastructure. They've not extended that visa, right? So we're lacking the skills to get the infrastructure built that could help facilitate the migration that we do have.
How important in our migration figures is the role of our education market? The fact that a lot of students, most of our tertiary education institutions, universities, rely a lot on overseas students to make their money.
Oh, for sure. And that's an important part, too, of the permanent and long-term migration figures. So the numbers that you'll hear on those, like in the last most recent data, was something like 72,000 net migration that were reporting permanent and long-term intention on being in New Zealand. That just means they want to stay here for more than a year. And a lot of students will fall into that category. So they do end up leaving. they just leave with a lag. So if there's a lot more that come in temporarily, that's a bulge that will sort itself out through departures in 3 years' time. But it's really important for the education sector. I think Kiwis underestimate the extent to which foreign students are subsidizing domestic tuition, because all these international students are paying just ridiculous fees, and that means that the universities are able to charge domestic students a lot less. So in the absence of those international students, either tuition rates would have to go up a lot or the government subsidy for domestic students would go up.
There is another way of looking at it, and that is that because they get these fees from the overseas students, that's where they devote their resources, because that's where you get the money from. So it also provides an incentive for universities to go, right, well, this is where the money is. You follow the money, don't you?
Well, the New Zealand universities would start running into trouble if they had too many foreign students relative to domestic. I think that's something they're always watching carefully to make sure that they're still going to be providing a good experience for students from both cohorts. There have been some documented rorts in the non-university training sector, and it's important that the Internal Affairs keeps an eye on that stuff. But I've not really seen particular evidence of skews towards, well, the closest you'd have to it is pushes to enroll a lot more foreign graduate students that sometimes might not be appropriate. At least there was some of that when I was in academia.
What will the government changes? Because there's going to be some tightening of immigration rules. The government's announced that. What impact will that have, if any?
Well, that one's been a little bit disappointing. We're sitting on top of a massive opportunity. If we want to get more skilled migrants, right, Donald Trump is doing his level best to scare the bejesus out of anybody who's living in the United States as a non-citizen. And you've got some of the world's most skilled people living in the U.S. on what they call an H-1B visa, which is for their skilled tech workers. So they can live and work there. You can't even get that visa unless you're in a very highly paid occupation in the U.S. Those guys would have a tough time coming in under New Zealand's current skilled migrant categories, because if you don't have a job in hand, you're not going to have the points to be able to get through the points thresholds. So in our report, we were recommending that in addition to the current points setup, you could just put it that if somebody's got a job offer for at least six-figure salary or some arbitrarily high amount of income, that's going to be evidence on its own that you're skilled enough, even if MB hasn't quite recognized the skill category. The changes that the government is putting in are going to instead be knocking out a lot of the categories that are currently counted as skilled and then replace them with a salary threshold. And that'll knock out a lot of migrants who are working in the hospitality sector.
Because people won't be allowed under a certain amount or
That's
over
right.
a certain amount?
They're not going to be allowed under a certain amount.
Right.
So a lot of restaurant managers could come into that kind of category. You'll hear some scoffing about whether that should really be counted as a skilled occupation, but it'd be interesting to see the scoffers try and run a restaurant successfully. Those things are in some of the most competitive industries out there.
Why do you think supposedly right-wing, centre-right government is doing that?
Have they received
advice from Treasury?
I think that they are just worried about electoral threats.
I think it's just a political thing.
I would expect so, that they're nervous about the threat that's coming from the anti-migration side, that they don't want to be seen as not clamping down on it, so they're putting in a few more hoops for people to jump through.
Oh, it'd be interesting doing an OIA request into Treasury or whatever, you know, the department that's been advising the government on those decisions, to find out what advice the government did get.
Well, MB often puts up advice, say, warning that migration could be depressing employment for native-born Kiwis. I don't know how they continue to have that line given the latest employment figures. It's increasingly implausible that there are substantial negative labor market effects on employment, at least, given that it's never been higher, the employment rate, when you go back to 1987. And we had 3-4 years of record-breaking net migration. So I'm not quite sure where they're getting that
idea
from.
There's one thing that somebody sent a text through, which is, okay, yes, employment is quite buoyant at the moment. The unemployment rate is relatively low. But wage rates aren't shooting up. They don't seem to be reflecting that yet. Maybe you could blame that on migrants.
I suppose you could. The net effect of migrants tends to be flat on wages when you look at the international studies on this. It would be tougher to do it in just a straight New Zealand context, but what work has been done by NZIER a couple of years back was suggesting that you get increases in per capita GDP with net migration rather than any reduction.
Why do you think the wage rate, given we've got, as you say, with these remarkable employment figures, wages aren't rising that much? Would you expect them to start to rise a bit more than they have been recently?
Well, there's been an interesting mix of things going on. So average productivity has been terrible, and that's been longstanding. Recently, you've had a lot of people who wouldn't have been in the labor market at all in prior eras that are now moving in under work requirements through WINS. So WINS is forcing a lot more people who never would have been trying for work previously to be looking for work, or at least reporting that they're looking for work, or moving into employment.
Or just begging.
Well, that may also be happening. At least when you walk around Wellington, it's always a little surprising.
Walk around most towns in New Zealand there.
Especially Wellington when the cruise ships are in. But it's just odd how it patterns with the cruise ships. But where you're having a lot of people coming in to the labor force who weren't there before and whose skills would be towards the lower end of the distribution, you're automatically going to be depressing productivity stats just because you're bringing in people who didn't have as strong of productivity characteristics beforehand. Now, that's hardly a damnation of anything. It's saying that they're better off if they're in work. Other people aren't made worse off, but the average productivity numbers might not come out quite as nicely as you'd hope.
How long before the rest of the world goes through an upward cycle again and we've got the opposite problem again? Because we will, won't we?
Oh, yeah. It's always cyclical.
That's what happens in New Zealand.
It's impossible to tell when that's going to happen, or at least I wouldn't want to forecast it.
There'll be some politician on election night saying, New Zealanders, come home. Remember that in 1999?
Yeah.
Jim Anderton.
And I remember John Key promising that he was going to reverse the outflow of Kiwis, and it seems that he's been successful in that. And so successful that he's brought a pile of new New Zealanders in as well.
Although, of course, his government right now is, as you say, restricting that. And yep. You would much rather they'd open the doors even wider, wouldn't you?
Well, I think that we can be a bit smarter about some of this. I think that we could profit by the opportunities we've got now in the U.S., that we could have a new visa category for really highly skilled workers that could especially be helping out in the tech sector that would have a tougher time getting in under the current rules. For example, it takes a lot of time to get a police background check from a lot of third world countries. An employer is not going to want to extend you a job offer that would let you make the points threshold if he's going to have to wait around till you clear a police background check from your home country if you've been living and working in the States for a decade. If you've not been deported from America for committing a crime and you've been safe there for a decade, do we really need to get a police background check from Bangladesh? It doesn't really make sense. We could be removing some of those hurdles. At the same time, I also think it would make sense to consider sponsorship regimes. So if there's somebody that you're good friends with from abroad and you're willing to vouch for them, that they're not going to be a drain on the public purse or go on welfare or anything like that, it's a bit of a misguided concern in the first place, since benefit rates for migrants are way lower than for native-born Kiwis. Why not let people sponsor somebody else to come in and give that additional way in?
Eric, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Crampton back with more largely libertarian thoughts on the New Zealand Initiative in a couple of months.